Doing lots
state.
Better, yeah. I can't hang on to a question for 30 seconds. And I guess it's sort of general. Do we know, and I had another meeting when we had the public testimony the other day, do we know for sure what the span of control is? I hearken back to the Barbara Roberts days after Measure 5 when we cut it down to 12 to 1 ratio, I believe.
I thought it was less than that.
And I've noticed in other budgets as we've done them this year, when I remember to ask or they remember to tell us, that we're gaining managers faster than the others, I think, percentage-wise. And so, and I somewhere along the line, something I'd been given had picked up that was a concern, and just for myself, it's been a concern of mine all session in all of the agencies, and I wanted to know what the ratio was of managers to
I think you've got a very good point that we'll ask Debbie to address pretty soon, and I think it's something that we haven't been addressing in a lot of budgets and probably should
be. That's true. And so my other concern is, as many times as they've given us something on this one piece, and I appreciate your bringing it again, I don't understand why we're cutting these positions that help people get back to work when the positions are federally funded. I just don't get that one, so maybe somebody will explain that to me.
Any other questions? If not, Mike, thank you for your testimony. This looks to me like you put quite a bit of work in, even though you have had the complete cooperation as a director, deputy director. We appreciate all the work you've done.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, senators and representatives.
Thank you. Next, we will have Jeff Gilmore from the Center for Research on Environmental Toxicology. We haven't given Jeff much opportunity like Zero to be prepared to talk to us this morning, but he met with me much earlier this morning, shared some things with me that CROWET does. Oh, I did this. Center for Research on Environmental Technology, and we would appreciate it.
Better I'll pay.
Oh, thank you. I didn't bring exchange with me. So.
Talking of bipartisan cooperation.
Oh, thank you very much, Representative Johnson.
Good morning.
Good morning, Jeff.
Well, it's a timely. For the record, Madam Chair, my name is Jeff Gilmore, and I'm employed by Oregon Health Sciences. I am not employed by the Center for Occupational Environmental Toxicology, and I am not the expert in this field. I would be more than happy to give you a little background about the center, and maybe I should, in a capsule, make this as short as possible. Members of your committee have asked for more in-depth information, and I'm inviting, with the members' approval, of course, to join at 12 o'clock today in room 177, where members from the center will be there with the material and do a more in-depth question and answer period about what the center does, how it's funded, and the desire, obviously, to continue on. But I'd like to give you a little historic legislative background of why the center was established and encapsulate some of the things they do. Years ago, when I sat on a different position, then Governor Goldsmith called a group of people together known as the Mahoney Hall Group over workers' comp. That group changed what I think is for the better for both workers and employers in the state, a improved workers' comp system. One of the items that was brought up under that was the discussion on where do we go to get expert opinion, number one, from scientific point of view of non-biasedness, on elements in the workplace, be it injury proneness or toxic substances. So out of that came the desire to fund two parts from two separate sources within the department, both from the workers and the employers' side, to fund and centered at housed at Oregon Health Sciences, a group of scientists that would do their very best to go for federal matching funds to do not only for Oregon, but for worldwide interest in workplace diseases. And this group has been an ongoing center and has built itself up. And they do have successes, but in science, as you know, you don't necessarily have discoveries the second you get money funded to research those. So some of these are ongoing and ongoing and ongoing. I would mention a couple of things that that they have worked on. One is the pesticide questions on whether and how far it follows the workers through the house, to the children, to the schools. That's been going on. One of the areas that they have requested from the legislature is to take a look at all material relating to the hepatitis within the workplace and the predominance of that. And there is a second issue that has been asked by them to do, and that is a controlled group study within this. And this is a hot debate this legislative session because bills are in the legislature, and there, in fact, one has been passed out of the House committee on this very subject. Now, I do, having sat through the management labor organizations put on by the governor to review legislation and the budget, and I do realize that the department, and discussing this with Ms. Kennedy, has a difficulty on the one side of the funding. There has been presented an option to change the statute so that the funding comes from solely one side of the budget, which would create a lot less difficulties for the department. And I'm not the one, I think maybe more the department is the one to present that as an option to you, if that is your desire. But as I said earlier, I'm not here as the scientist expert that has the wet labs centered at Oregon Health Sciences that is doing the research to be able to go into more specifics about what they do. The legislative background is something that the group has decided, labor and management, and to this day, both labor and management, to my knowledge, is extremely supportive from the AOI aspect to all of the labor aspect of having this center, a place to go for a non-biased opinion, whether it's an LR scare or whatever, to do the scientific research. I don't know if there's any more that I can add to that statement that I'm here to make.
But fine. I think that's fine, Jeff. It's more knowledge than we had.
Yes, I do understand that.
Some of us had yet.
And you always wonder about the arena in which you are. You know, we will respond, obviously, but to any questions asked, and we would make any presentation as a, quote, Center for Occupational Environmental Toxicology group, but
we'll have somebody in the room next
absolutely
door.
And we will be available upon call with advanced, obviously, warning.
Sorry, we didn't give you more.
No,
warning.
Hey, that's no problem.
You shed some light on something that didn't have much light on it before.
Yes,
and I thank you for that. And as I explained to you, I've got another meeting
yes.
on the Oregon Health Plan. That
we would set a meeting at your convenience if you need more information. There's one aspect that I failed to mention so far, and that is, there is an advisory group which does meet quarterly to give direction, to give response to the center. And that group is also included among it, two House members and two Senate members, which change every 2 years. And I'm sure that the past House member, Representative Randy Leonard, and the current Senate member, Senator Frank Shields, would be more than happy to come down and express what they think this group does, what they think this importance is. Now, the one caution that I would have, and as cautions are always, this is not general fund. This is money that is by groups who are willing to have paid into this, and it is matched. We try very desperately to match this with federal funds, which is an ongoing deal. So the difference of funding, which it has obviously gone up because more people work and this and that over a period of time, but a sharp decline or whatever in this funding would hypothetically jeopardize or change how we request and try to match federal funds for our program. That's the only caution I would bring up.
Thank you, Jeff. Questions?
Madam Chair, the workers' compensation premium assessment account is where this does come from, so it does come from industry, labor and industry, is my understanding. I'm wondering if we could get some kind of a history of two things, perhaps a five-year history or a biennial history of the amount of workers' compensation premium assessment account which has been utilized for the Center for Research for Occupational Environmental Toxicology, as well as the amount of match that the university has been successful in obtaining.
Yes. That,
with that.
I do not have those numbers, but we will present those numbers. Yes, absolutely.
That would be most helpful.
Thank absolutely.
Representative Johnson.
Madam Chair, in the interest of full disclosure, I feel compelled to state that I serve on the board of the Health Sciences University Foundation and on the executive committee of Dornbecker, which is associated with the Hill. It's the pediatric arm of the Oregon Health Sciences University. I do so proudly. I know of the work of the CROET, but I just think that it's important that I disclose that.
Thank you.
And that's a good point because it does fit in with the teaching of physicians and other people that have interest in this this specific area of research.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate you filling in at the last minute to provide us some information. Okay, any other public testimony related to the workers' compensation insurance division or fee bill? If not, okay. Then we'll have Deputy Director Debbie Lincoln. And we want to call now the Insurance Division Administrator as well.
Comp Board. A Workers' Compensation.
Workers' Compensation Board.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm, for the record, Debbie Lincoln, Deputy Director of GCPS, and the next presentation will be the Workers' Compensation Board budget, and Maureen Bach has joined us. She's the chair of the board, and she'll present their budget.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Good morning.
Members of the committee. I'm Maureen Bach. I'm the public member and the chair of the Workers' Compensation Board. I'm here today to talk to you about the board's budget, which is one of the last agencies that actually gets a large hunk of money from the premium assessment operating account. The executive summary for our agency begins on page 36 of your executive summary book. The board is a little bit different agency within the Department of Consumer and Business Services in that we do not regulate or have an administrative role. Rather, we are an adjudication agency. We are an independent agency within the department, and we get support services from the department. And that includes our fiscal support, budgeting, personnel, and information management assistance. As I said, the board's only purpose is to ensure timely and impartial resolution of disputes that arise within the workers' compensation system. The forum where they are initially heard is in our hearings division in front of our administrative law judges. And the issues that are primarily resolved there relate to compensability of workers' compensation claims when they are denied and responsibility as in which employer should be paying for that. The hearings are held at various locations around the state. We have four staffed offices, including Medford, Eugene, Salem, and Portland. We also travel to eight unstaffed offices, and that includes Astoria, Baker City, Bend, Coos Bay, Klamath Falls, Ontario, Pendleton, and Roseburg. And we travel to those locations because the parties have placed a high premium on being able to conduct their hearings in person. When you're looking at credibility of witnesses and that kind of thing, it's real important to be able to view their demeanor and hear the testimony firsthand. Our hearings division also conducts mediations with a settlement rate of about 90%, and that's a voluntary program. The parties can select their mediator from one of the administrative law judges in our agency. And then when a hearing is held in front of our administrative law judges, either party can take an appeal to the board itself, which sits as an appellate review body. From the board level, it can then be appealed to the Court of Appeals and subsequently to the Supreme Court. Our hearings division, as you heard, also has jurisdiction here at OSHA disputes. And those orders are appealed directly to the Court of Appeals. The statute that is our enabling statute is contained in 656, and it sets forth timeframes for the board to docket cases and to issue opinions and orders in the hearings division level, and also for us to docket cases at the board level. And we are happy to say that our hearings division meets those goals about 95%+ of the time. And we no longer have a backlog at the board level, which was a large concern about 10 years ago. And we have also been bringing down our timeframes for issuing our decisions at the board level. We now have a median time of about 130 days. Another goal that we undertook in the last biennium was to continue refining our processes and looking at technology as a way to do that. We recently, and I know this is going to sound funny, we recently changed our rules to allow parties to fax documents to us for filing in our forum, which seems like an odd thing, but we hadn't done that before. So that's one of the ways we've done it. We've also have an email address on our website where we have a webmaster who checks that daily so we can respond to questions from people, and we get questions from all over the country and internationally. We've had people from Australia ask about our workers' comp system here. I'd now like to talk about workload issues. Before last session, there were some concerns about whether or not the board had been appropriately downsizing its workforce, and there were particular concerns about our hearings division. So we participated in a Secretary of State audit that was actually requested by the department itself, and they reviewed our hearings division staffing model and determined that it was a valid model for staffing our agency, and we have continued to use that model to look at whether or not we need to change our request for positions. As you'll see on page 38, the workload for the hearings division has been relatively stable over the last couple of years, and at the board level it has continued to decline. You've heard John Schultz talk about the current reform package that is Senate Bill 485, and we do not anticipate that that will change our workload dramatically. It doesn't have retroactivity issues that some of the previous reform legislation have, so we have not requested any positions, nor do we feel like we need to cut positions at this time. We're probably most proud of the strides we've taken in the area of customer service. Like I said, we've changed our rules to allow parties to fax documents to us. We've instituted the web mailbox so it can be accessed via the internet, and we have placed our board orders on the internet in a searchable database on our website. One of the things that we've done as well is we've continued to scrutinize vacancies as they've occurred to see if we can place the duties with another position or maybe even stop doing whatever it is that position has done. We have been working very hard with the department, and most particularly the workers' comp division, and I owe you a quarter for saying that. And we did that most recently when we decided to look at how we archive files. We were saving our files, our board orders, and paying the warehouse to warehouse paper. Because the workers' comp division is actually the official record keeper of workers' comp files, the division accepted responsibility for maintaining all of the board's final orders in its files, which they were doing anyway, and providing them to the public upon request. By actually formalizing that arrangement, the board can eliminate physically warehousing those files, which will save us about $36,000 biennially. Last session, there was a bill passed and signed into law that restructured our agency, and it was done primarily to recognize that we are a quasi-judicial agency, not a regulatory agency. What the structure change was the board chair became the executive head of the agency, and the managers report to the board chair, and the board members themselves have a role, as you can see on page 36, that is primarily to decide cases, approve claims disposition agreements, decide on motion cases, adopt administrative rules for our forum and consult on administrative hiring or administrative law judge hiring decisions, and then they provide advice to the board chair and to the director upon request. In conclusion, our budget request maintains our current service level. It would be used to continue meeting our statutory timeframes at the hearings division level and at the board review level. We would continue to provide the quality mediation services that we currently provide. And I guess at this point, I will let Satish take over and explain our budget.
Any questions of Maureen? Representative Johnson.
Thank you. I have two. Do you have a list of the composition of your board?
We have two members that come from the background and understanding of people with a labor background, and two members that have a management background, and then there's one public member.
And you're the public
right.
member. And thank you. The second question is, all of your mediation services are internal to the board. If I understood your testimony correctly, you don't rely on the Dispute Resolution Commission or any external services for your mediation services.
Chair Representative Johnson, that is correct. We are trained administrative law judges with expertise in the area of workers' compensation. And a lot of times they also deal with collateral issues, such as wage and hour claims that may have arisen from the same fact patterns. So there are some collateral issues that are resolved as well.
Thank you very much. Further questions? Satish, we're ready for your presentation.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee. Satish Padia with the Department of Administrative Services. And I'll tell you how the governor's recommended budget was developed for the Workers' Compensation Board.
And that's on page 39. Okay.
The starting point was the 1999-2001 legislatively adopted budget. This consisted of $15.6 million total funds. There was one emergency board action dealt with the employee compensation issue. And that increased the legislatively adopted budget by $457,787. Then there were base budget adjustments that are related to the positions. With that, we have the base budget of $16.1 million total funds. Essential package 010 is the non-personal information control systems adjustment. This led to a reduction of $82,821. And the last one is package 030, cost for inflation and price list. This is an increase of $150,726. I just want to clarify a question that Representative Butler asked yesterday with regards to state government service charges. Besides the Department of Administrative Services charges, it also includes charges like the Secretary of State, State Treasurer. These are charges that every state agency pays to subsidize the cost of other state agencies.
Representative Johnson and then Representative Butler. I was just going to ask Satish to confirm a couple of these numbers again. Because unless I misunderstood you, I have different numbers. Give me the subtotal for the 2001-03 current service level.
The subtotal for that is $16,232,590.
I noticed different numbers as well.
Good. That number conforms, but as you were reading off the numbers, I just had different numbers in my book, and I was...
Well, what I did is I added some of these numbers, like package 010. We have the vacancy factor adjustment of a decrease of 86,674. And then non-fixed adjustment for unemployment and other.
I see what you've done. Thank you. I apologize.
And Representative Butler, your question?
I just wanted to confirm with Satish then that the number that we were looking at yesterday for OSHA, then that $228,000 that we had in government shifts included also then additional Secretary of State staff in that budget?
Yes, Representative.
Okay.
There are a number of costs that state agencies charge other state agencies. Like in the, a major portion of that is Department of Administrative Services charges that I just wanted to clarify that also includes fees that the State Treasury charges, the Secretary of State charges, and other charges.
Yeah. Further questions? No, thank you, Satish. Next, we're going to go to the insurance. All right, thank you very much, Maureen. And we'll go next with the Insurance Division Administrator.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, it's Debbie Lincoln again. While Joel is coming to the table, I just wanted to point out that I put in front of you a memo, again, to respond to questions that were asked yesterday. And if at any point you want to go through those, or maybe...
Let's go ahead and go through those now, Debbie.
The first question that was asked was about Oregon fatality rates compared to national fatality rates. And on the first attachment, the chart you see, compare U.S. and Oregon fatality rates as well as injury and illness rates, you'll notice that Oregon rates are slightly higher, though they go down more precipitously, and U.S. rates hold flat. The reason they are higher is because this is not adjusted for industry mix. That is, Oregon has a little bit more hazardous mix than the country as a whole. If they were adjusted, they would be more closely aligned with U.S. rates. The second question asked was about attrition of workers who received worksite modification services. We don't have our statistics broken down to that particular program, but the worksite modification program is part of the preferred worker program, and we do have statistics on that. The second chart, the second attachment, shows that workers who have taken advantage of benefits, 69% of injured workers who have taken advantage of benefits are employed 4 to 6 years after the injury. Only 47% of workers, injured workers who haven't taken advantage of benefits are still employed at that time after injury. So we do see a significant increase in employment from people who have taken advantage of those preferred worker benefits. The third question asked about the results of the survey in Oregon OSHA. Of employers, and we've attached the latest survey results on the last attachment, and it's fairly long, but the results paragraph on the first page will give you a summary of what we find. And we do this fairly regularly so that we can adjust our services both to be more effective and to be less onerous for businesses. And the last question was about the cost of the ergonomic steering committee. I'm not sure we answered that clearly. I want to make it clear that there is no cost to this besides staff time. We do an awful lot of these kinds of focus groups and steering committees and advisory groups, and very rarely do we pay per diem our travel. These are people who dedicate, donate their time and expertise to us, and it certainly makes our shop run better, but there is no additional cost besides what our staff time puts into it.
Thank you, Debbie. Any further questions on the answers the agency provided? No, Joel, if you'll go ahead. We usually take a break, so you've got, we can go 15 minutes if that's okay.
That's about how long I'll need unless there are questions.
Unless we interrupt you. We'll try to leave you alone and let you proceed.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joel Ario, and I'm the administrator of the Oregon Insurance Division. Our presentation is on pages 54 to 63 of your summary notebook. I'll be walking through some of the highlights on those pages and would certainly be happy to take questions on any of the other points that I don't cover in my oral testimony today. We start with page 54. You see there an organizational chart and some figures at the bottom about the budget. You'll note that our proposed budget is slightly over $15 million. For the next biennium, and that it includes 96 staff positions. That is a staffing level that's remained almost constant for us through the last decade. We've been in the mid-90s now since about 1991. The division, you'll note there, is organized into four sections. The first and largest section is our consumer protection section. That section is responsible for ensuring the fair treatment of consumers. It reflects our statutory mandate that the insurance code, quote, be liberally construed for the benefit of the insurance buying public. That's kind of number one for us, and all that we do is to look at the code and to look at issues that we face from the perspective of how it would affect the insurance buying public. That section does four primary functions. First, it resolves individual consumer complaints. Second, it investigates alleged violations of the code and takes administrative action where necessary against agents and companies. Third, it conducts market conduct exams, which usually involve field audits to measure company compliance with the code. And then finally, we have a small counseling program for seniors within the consumer protection section that helps them deal with the fast-changing Medicare market, Medicare program these days. That's the subject of one of our option packages, so I'll come back later to talk more about that particular program, which is funded by federal grant monies. You'll see our second section is the company regulation section. It is responsible for ensuring the financial soundness of insurers. In some ways, this is our most important function, since there's probably nothing more devastating for the consumer than to find out that their insurance company does not have the money to honor its promises. Preventing insolvencies is also a top priority for the industry, since the way the insurance markets work, the companies that are left in the market basically pick up the tab for the company, for any company that goes insolvent. There are some tax complications, which means the general fund has a share here too, but the industry as a whole clearly has an incentive and an interest in maintaining a healthy and strong marketplace. That section has three major functions. It conducts financial examinations every 3 to 5 years of domestic insurers. It analyzes, second function is to analyze financial data on an ongoing basis, particularly focused on troubled companies. And third, it licenses insurance companies, grants them certificates of authority, and takes administrative action against financially troubled companies. Fortunately, we have not had an insolvency here in Oregon for over a decade now, but when companies go insolvent in other states that are licensed here, we do have to take administrative action in those kind of situations. The third section you'll see on page 54 is the rates and forms section. That section is responsible for reviewing and approving insurance contracts or forms and also certain insurance rates. The level of review that we do on forms and rates varies by line of insurance, basically based on how competitive the marketplace is. So, for instance, in health, we have prior approval both of forms and rates in the individual and small group market. In the large group market, we do approve forms, but we don't look at rates at all. They're not even filed. In some other lines, you might have filing use of rates. It just varies depending on the competitiveness of the market, basically. The last section you'll see there is our administrative services section. Its responsibilities include agent licensing, which is primarily a clerical function for us, a budget and personnel, and various other division-wide duties. Our publications person is in that section, for instance. That's an overview of the way the division is organized. If you turn to the next page, page 55, you'll see some information about our mission and some of our strategic goals. You'll note in the middle of the page there that our mission statement is to administer the insurance code for the protection of the insurance buying public while promoting a positive business climate. We've talked some already about the first part of that, protecting the insurance buying public. The second half is equally important to us because, one of the worst things for a consumer is to find a line of insurance, they need a product, and the product's simply not available in this state at an affordable rate. So promoting the positive business climate is a very important part of what we do. You'll see in the strategic goals we have a number listed. I'll highlight three. The first is to work with affected interests, which include consumers, insurers, and federal regulators these days, to implement coordinated regulation of financial services. That's a mouthful there. What does that mean? Back in 1999, Congress passed what's called the Gramm-Leach-Bliley Bill, which essentially tore down barriers between banking, securities, and insurance that had existed since the Great Depression, and essentially told all three industries that they could get into each other's businesses. So you have State Farm these days buying banks, you have banks buying insurance companies, et cetera, et cetera. The ultimate vision of this is that there will be more convenience for the consumer because there'll be one-stop shopping for financial services, that in 10 years or something, most of us will buy most of our insurance, banking, and securities products, investment products, all from the same sources. That's kind of the theory of that law. What it does for us as regulators is puts two new responsibilities on us. One, we have to now in insurance coordinate with banking and securities regulators because we're all in each other's businesses. That means that we have to work out new relationships both with federal regulators in the banking and securities case and with state regulators in other states in the insurance case. It's easier to work with the banking and securities side of this, frankly, because both banking and securities are regulated at the state level within the Department of Consumer and Business Services. So I simply have to walk down the hall, talk to my fellow administrator over at DFCCS about how to coordinate that kind of regulation within the state. For the banking and securities people, the coordination across states also is a little easier than it is for us because those two industries have always had a significant component of national regulation. There's an important state piece too, but both the Securities and Exchange Commission and some of the federal banking regulators have been actively involved in kind of bringing about a more coordinated regulatory climate. Insurance has been primarily regulated, almost exclusively regulated at the state level, and some people, particularly in the industry, might say that we haven't been all that coordinated in how we've approached our regulatory responsibilities. Under the Gramm-Leach-Bliley bill now, there is very much interest from all sectors of the industry and from the consumer community on a more coordinated national regulatory system. So we're trying to take the best parts of the state system, but work in a more coordinated fashion. And you'll see this theme throughout my testimony this morning and some of the insurance bills you see in the legislature this session. Second goal, that strategic goal we have, is to use technology more efficiently, both for simple efficiency gains and also for better customer service. Our website is a key part of what we look at these days in terms of communicating with all of our different stakeholders. We have all of our consumer publications on our website. We put our enforcement orders up there. We put our financial and market conduct examinations. We pretty much put anything that we have that's in an electronic form up on our webpage as a much more effective and efficient way to get information out, also a cheaper way, I might add. We have an interactive consumer complaint form on our webpage, and we now accept company applications for licensure on a uniform national form via the internet. And in a few minutes, I'll talk more about rates and forms filing, which we are just about ready to put up into an electronic format as well. Our third strategic goal that I want to highlight here briefly is to work with the legislature, the governor, and other state agencies to broaden access to affordable health care. We don't have the main burden here on the state Medicaid program, the kind of guts of the Oregon Health Plan, that's over in DHS, but we do have ancillary responsibilities that are very important for the commercial marketplace, particularly the individual and small group health markets. If those markets aren't healthy, if there aren't products available at affordable rates, that puts more pressure on the Oregon Health Plan and the public program. So our real role is to keep the individual and small group markets as healthy as possible, kind of working in tandem with the public programs. Turning to page 56 and the public, or the accomplishments of the division, I'd highlight just a couple here. You'll note at the top of the page that we've successfully handled several high-volume workloads, 78,000 rates and forms reviews in the last biennium, 34,000 inquiries and 10,000 consumer complaints, and 9,000 new agent licenses. There are almost now 43,000 insurance agents, resident and non-resident, in the state. So a big part of our job is to keep the trains running on time in terms of processing those high-volume workloads. We admitted 101 new companies to the state in this last biennium and cut our review time by more than 50% for those company admissions. We're now down to under 60 days from the date of filing to the average date of ruling on an admission. We published new consumer guides on health and homeowner insurance and translated several of our key guides into Spanish. All of that, of course, is on the web, too. We revamped our training curriculum for the 200 volunteers who are really the heart and soul of our senior counseling program for Medicare, and we also put that training curriculum up on the web. And then finally, we facilitated discussions between consumers and health insurers on some very delicate patient protection issues, and I'm happy to report that the bill that was brought in, it really, we were the facilitators here, so the industry and the consumer groups that worked this out deserve the credit for it, but it did result in a consensus bill, House Bill 3040, that passed the House, I think unanimously, I'm not sure, maybe one negative vote, and is on its way over to the Senate. These issues, as you probably know, have been pretty contentious in other sessions and in the federal Congress these days, so we're pretty happy with the result there. In terms of specific goals for the next biennium, the bottom half of page 56, a big part of our job is going to be to successfully implement the legislation that's coming out of this session. We had a major overhaul of our agent licensing laws. That's part of bringing the uniformity and consistency to that area of regulation so that an agent now will have a pretty easy time being, if they're licensed and in good standing in their home state, they'll be able to go to other states in a pretty streamlined way, including our state, and get a non-resident license. There'll be a number of issues there of implementation on that. The privacy bill that's part of another one of our pieces of legislation will take some good implementation work. The patient protection is going to take implementation. So a lot of our work will be taking several major pieces of legislation and implementing them successfully. A second major priority is to have a more efficient rates and forms review process. If you go back to the notion that we're moving from 50 individual fiefdoms in insurance regulation to a more coordinated national system, probably the single flashpoint for the industry anyway is the notion that if I want to put a new product in the market, I've got to go to 50 different states. They all have different rules, different timetables, and it takes me, you know, sometimes as much as a year or even more to get a single product through all of those review processes. So we are engaged in a number of discussions at the national level to coordinate those kinds of reviews. We're part of a pilot experiment right now with 9 other states to do coordinated review. It's better for the consumer, too, I think, because our actuaries then pool their resources with the actuaries of 9 other departments. We get a much better product. We're also going to be publishing our standards on the web for review so companies have a much clearer idea of what to expect, and we intend to complete all of our reviews within 30 days. Final goal that I'll highlight is, again, to enhance our website. We focus on 3 key constituencies there: the insurers, who particularly care about licensing issues and rates and forms issues, the agents, who particularly care about licensing issues, and consumers, who are always looking for good information to take into the marketplace to help them pick the best products. I'll skip page 57 and move over to page 58, where you'll see that we've got the statistics there show an increased workload in most of the areas that we're responsible for, although our staff size, again, has remained constant in the mid-90s for the decade. The number of agents has gone up from 22,000 to 43,000, almost double. The number of rates and forms filings we review has gone from 29,000 to 43,000. And the insurance premium is probably the most important number. Premium numbers have gone from about $6.8 billion, and we don't have the 2,000 number in there, but it's going to be close to $10 billion. So about a 30% increase overall in the insurance industry in the state in the last decade. With that, I'll turn it over to Satish to talk about the budget and then come back on the option packages.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, this is Satish Upadhyay, and I'll tell you how the governor's budget was developed. This is pretty much the revised budget is pretty much a current service level budget except for one policy package. The starting point is the 9901 legislatively approved budget. This consists of $13.9 million total funds. There was one emergency board action that dealt with employee compensation cost increases, which increased the legislatively adopted budget by $354,518. Then there were the base budget adjustments of $193,770 for the administrative biennialized e-board and phase-outs, and there was an estimated cost of 0103 merit increase of $194,630. So with that, we have the base budget of $14.6 million total funds. Package 010, there was a vacancy factor adjustment of $89,104. And the non-fixed adjustment for unemployment, overtime, temporaries, and mass transit taxes of $7,623. On package 030, we have the cost for inflation and price list and items of $168,706 increase.
an increase in state government service charges of $95,124. With that, we have the current service level budget of $14.8 million. There's in the recommended budget, there were two policy packages. Package 141, it adds two positions, and the division will talk more about this package. It increases the agency's budget by $249,263. Package 142, that has been withdrawn by the agency. So the governor's revised budget has $15,032,276 and 95.21 full-time equivalent positions.
Thank you very much, Satish. Are there questions for either Mr. Ario or Mr. Padilla at this time? If not, we'll go ahead and stand at recess for a 5-minute break at the request of the chair.